Yeah, so your children had the
Yeah, and I made
good
it,
fortune.
I made a special effort to get home around dinner time and be there at, you know, these key hours you know, and to do things with them because I wanted to. It wasn't felt
right.
I felt obliged because I felt I didn't want to deprive myself of those opportunities and find that they had grown. And so, in fact,
you weren't
over
there.
The years, I was amazed many times when I would go to the kids' ball games and when they were in high school. And I would just, you know, leave downtown and drive out there at Shadyside Academy in Fox Chapel to watch a football game and so on. And I was just amazed at how few parents there were. And there might have been maybe one or two other fathers. And, you know, not that I felt that I deserved the medal. I mean, I was, you know, and I knew how busy I was. And,
right.
You know, and I knew some
you
of the
managed.
Other fathers that I did. And, I, you know, I said to myself, boy, you know, you're missing things that you're never going to be able to reproduce again.
True.
And then as the kids got older, another thing I liked to do was to take them with me on some of my trips. And I would take them usually one at a time, sometimes two, one at a time. I did a lot of speaking of postgraduate seminars, medical legal postgraduate seminars. So I would take the kids with me. It could be Lake Tahoe or Boston or New York or anywhere like that. And it was, you know, just a wonderful opportunity.
Experience for them,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Tell me, being a public figure, did it make it a little difficult for your children?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure that there were
friends
some,
among the teachers, or you know how teachers say, "Oh, mom."
Yeah, I don't think so.
They never complain.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Because that happens sometimes. When
sure, it does. I, you know, I guess that. Like happens in any kind of situation. Little kids can be quite mean and make comments, but nothing.
Sometimes teachers do, too, the
yeah.
expectation that if your father's at this level, you should
yeah.
be working at
well,
this
the
level.
Well, the kids, when they were in private schools, and so I guess maybe the teachers there, you know, they weren't the only kids from homes whose parents, you know, were active and somewhat, you know, maybe prominent or successful. So, you know, it wasn't like they were the only kids that came from such a home.
Where did they go to school?
The three boys started off at St. Edmund's Academy and then switched over to Shadyside Academy Middle School and Senior School. My daughter started off at Winchester Thurston and then she switched over to the Shadyside Senior School for high school.
Were the kids, as they were growing up into adolescence, were they interested in what you were doing?
Oh, yes. Sure, they were. Because we would talk about things at the dinner table, and as I've said, take them with me in some programs and so on. So, you know, I guess to some extent that kind of exposure generated some interest early life and, you know, maybe played some role in their choice of professional career.
Yes.
Although they chose, it wasn't like with me, I think I mentioned to you, my father,
yes.
you know, told me that I was going to be a doctor. And obviously, you know, I didn't rebel. And I'm not unhappy about what he did in retrospect. But, you know, my kids, they chose for themselves. And we did encourage them to do this, but you know, they were always well motivated. And varied. They're not, you know, they're not all the same. You know,
right,
different,
right.
Some different personalities, and all of them handle their own educational pursuits somewhat differently, and so on. But all were serious, and certainly, you know, the graduate schools.
And I just wondered, you know, as a public figure, you get things written in the newspaper, both positive and some very negative.
Yep.
And I just wondered how your children would react to seeing their dad, whether or not it was
Yeah, well, when it was negative, of course, I'm sure that it distressed them.
Did you discuss it?
Well, sure. Well, it wasn't, you know, later years, because when I had a lot of adverse publicity and legal problems here that went on essentially 1979 into about the mid-80s, they were of an age to fully comprehend what was happening, obviously. Now, then, David went away to college in 80, Danny in 81, Benji in 83. Ingrid was here all the time. But even when they were away, you know, they would know. And in fact, you know, we send them newspaper articles and so on. Not everything. So sure, there's no doubt that they were hurt and offended and dismayed and angered by some of the things that were being said and so on. But you know, I'm kind of glad that they were away, so that they didn't have to, you know, live through this each day.
Right.
Interestingly, in my trial, I went to trial. The three boys testified. My attorney went down to testify.
Wow, that's interesting.
Just you know, it's all part of, you know, establishing what kind of a person you are,
right,
and so on,
right,
and so forth. So along with Rabbi Jacob and Monsignor Rice and Mayor Caligiuri and Pittsburgh Steeler Sam Davis, you know, you do a wide range,
right.
And so no, they were never shielded from this stuff.
Was this in regard to that
stuff involving the coroner's office? Yeah,
the
right.
Money
right.
And
professional education.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they volunteered to come and.
Well, yeah.
You
actually, I didn't even know about it until it was a done deal.
Really?
Yeah, my attorney
called them,
talked with them, and so on, and then you know, I knew about it before they came into court. But I mean, I didn't even know he was talking
it's
with
a bit
them.
Unusual, isn't it?
Well, he didn't want, you know, he's a very, very excellent attorney, and he just felt that it was best to just do it, you know, that way, and just talk with them. And
he knew enough about your children to know
be
able to verbalize.
Well, of course, yeah.
Well,
of course,
uh-huh. Yeah. Tell me, what kind of, did they have a Hebrew education?
Yes, they all went to the Hebrew Institute from the very beginning,
mm-hmm,
and enjoyed it very much. They really liked it.
All four?
They had the old crew there, Saul Abrams,
yes,
and Kamenetsky, and
Hansi Butler.
Hansi Butler and Tippy,
yes,
and
Tippy Gore.
Tippy Gore. And a very wonderful man. He's quite slight, elderly man. Well, anyway, they liked it a lot. And then they all had their bar mitzvahs there, and her bat mitzvah there. Saul Abrams handled them all. And then they all continued at the Jewish school for advanced studies. Yeah, they all went there on Sundays, I think, right? Yeah.
Has any of that rubbed off in terms of their own religious observances today?
In terms of their own religious beliefs, very much so. There's no question. They all have very strong feelings about their Jewishness. David, my eldest son, speaks fluent Hebrew. They've all been to Israel a couple of times. David's been to Israel now maybe 8-10 times. He's
really?
Led a couple of missions there. In fact, just recently, a month or so ago, was the head of a single mission. The others, you know, all read Hebrew. They don't speak it fluently.
Did any of them attend Hebrew U in their third year of college?
No, but one of my sons did an archaeological dig over there one summer, Danny, the second son.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, by the way, went to law school there
really?
For a whole semester at Tel Aviv University School of Law.
Did she have to have classes in Hebrew?
No, they were taught in English, yeah.
Yeah. I know they
Jewish
use English
professor
text.
From Temple Law School, he's been doing this for many years, very nice guy, and considered took courses there for a few months.
Was it a postgraduate kind
No, it was part of, these were law school courses while she was in law school.
I see, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So it was a little different than what someone usually gets. Was
well,
it counted
yeah,
as part of her
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, she got full credit, yeah.
I see.
Full credit, yeah.
So you were alone here for a year.
Well, that's right. That occasion and then the time when she was doing her master's degree, which she was also in Israel.
Oh, she was in Israel.
I mentioned the master's in international
law.
Affairs. No.
Oh, international affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So she was in Israel.
She was interviewing people on the kibbutzes.
Oh, I see. She went around.
All around the country, visited some of them. Who had gone back to their native countries, Denmark, Norway. She concentrated on Scandinavia because that's where she was from, and then Finland mostly.
Well, your kids really should be very proud.
Yeah, well, I
of what
I
she's
think,
undertaken
yeah.
and what you've undertaken.
Yeah, well,
they
I
have
think,
to be
I think they are,
really
you know,
feel
as,
good
as,
about
yeah,
themselves.
As, you know, as we are proud of them. And we, you know, we've been fortunate. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
One of the things that when you were speaking of your father earlier and talked about how you did what he wanted, that you really, I mean, you agreed with it, but that you really were very dutiful.
Yes, I was. That's right. Yeah.
That doesn't right. seem to be necessarily your persona.
Well, it may not be now, but, you know, I think... I wasn't atypical. I was very typical of that generation and the generations before where kids, you know, pretty much did what their parents
advised.
You know, I don't, you know, he did not do this in a harsh dictatorial fashion. And I'll never know. Obviously, it's moot as to what would have been his reaction if I had told him that, I hate medicine, I hate science, and so on and so forth. I'll never know. You know, he wouldn't have did, what would he have done? He wouldn't have disowned me, or...
Don't you think it was a
so
time...
So I think, you know, it was... I mean, as I never felt that I was being put upon. I never felt mm-hmm. that I was being forced. I just said that the direction was laid out, and I never questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if I had questioned it, then... But...
Maybe that should be a lesson... for all of us to give more
well,
direction.
I think that we may have gone a little too far today, you know, with, say, well, you know, kid, everybody would decide for themselves and so on and so forth. I think direction is needed.
At least discussion.
Guidance, counseling, and so on and so forth.
Don't
kids
you think
have to be,
helped.
You can, you know, in their decision-making process, that's different from saying that they're, you know, forced to do something.
Yeah, it's also a matter of your relationship with the children
yes.
as to whether they receive what you have to say. And I think that you were, your dad was at a time when fathers wanted, that generation wanted their children to go into a profession.
Where they would be,
where
their,
they
own
would
boss,
be their own boss.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. You know, the standard, exactly right.
Right.
You're Jewish and you should be your own boss.
That's
and be
right.
not dependent on anybody and so on. And medicine, obviously, was the number one thing
yes.
for those reasons, as well as financial security,
that's
right?
Right. That's right.
There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
It
and
you
also,
know, also it was considered a noble profession and you were doing something worthwhile. But there are other noble professions. How come kids, Jewish kids then, except from some homes, weren't all pushed to become rabbis? If it was only a matter of being noble, or a noble philosopher, or a noble... because it was a combination of being educated, being respected, making a good living, being independent, doing something worthwhile. And, you know, it's not that there aren't many, many other fields in which you can have those things, but probably there's none that, at least prior to recent times with managed care, but there was none that really combined all of those things as as cohesively as did medicine. So if you weren't a businessman, and you know, you weren't going into your father's business or your in-law's business or so on, and you didn't care to be a businessman, you know, what was better than the medicine?
There was also, don't you think, a deep interest in education for many of those people at that time, your parents. They didn't have the opportunity,
oh, yeah, just
and they
for
came
the
to
purpose
America.
Of education itself.
Yeah.
I'm sure many parents were equally proud of their kids who became, you know, teachers and
right.
dentists and engineers and so on. Absolutely. I agree with you. That was most fundamental. That was the number one thing. Get an education. Exactly.
I'm not sure that's the same today among Jewish
parents.
Well,
I think
I'm not, I don't know.
I think a lot of things have diminished
in
importance and significance among Jewish parents. It's all part of assimilation all over a period of time, second, third generations for most of us, and some people who go back longer. But talking about the bulk, people who came over in the 1890s into the 1920s from Eastern European Jewry, you know, so much has changed. You know, and a lot of things we've picked up as a result of this acculturation process in a society,
free
that
society.
Has probably been best for Jews in the history of Jews.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that everything that's happened has been
right.
good. Divorces, alcoholism, spousal abuse, breakdown of family discipline
right.
and family structure and so on and so forth. There's nothing commendable
no.
about these things, is
no.
it? That all goes with the turf.
New,
there's no question.
Way
and,
of living.
And by the way, it's not only with Jews. I mean, you know, the subject for another day. If you look at Oriental kids and others, or Greek or Italian families, you know, where there's strong family disciplines, and you look at the ones who've been here for two and three generations,
yes.
and you'll see big differences.
Difference,
there's
right.
no question. This is the price you pay for a free, open,
right,
democratic
right, right.
Society.
Which just, when you mention the Orientals, you know, one time Jewish children were proficient in music.
Yes.
And we're up top.
And now you, see
now
the
you have
exactly.
the
that,
Orientals.
That was the other thing. That was the other thing. That, you know, why are there so many Jews mm-hmm. where they're in Europe, Yasha Heifetz and Nathan Milstein and Tasha Seidel and all of those
great
musicians, and then Yehuda Menuhin and so on. And then in this country,
Yo-Yo
too, and then in Israel, right, you know, it's Perlman, that whole group, et cetera, because they were pushed into music.
Right.
And there's no question on a percentage basis, I'm sure, the number of Jewish kids who took music lessons in America, you know, we'll just talk in modern times, 40s, on the percentage. Exceeded by far the percentage of any other nationality or
yeah.
ethnic group. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
No question.
Yeah.
And you're
tell
right,
me,
you see this among Oriental
yeah, right.
families today.
Tell me, are your three children who are married to Jews?
No. I mean yes
yeah.
and no.
Yes and no. One's yes
well,
and
no. Only
not.
Two are married.
Yeah. Yeah.
David and
two.
Not married,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Benjamin here in town is married to a Jew, Flynn Berendt. Her mother is Linda Bushkoff.
Mm-hmm.
Married now with Stanley Bushkoff. That Stanley
yes.
Bushkoff is Flynn's
right.
Stepfather. Les Berendt, her father, is in town. So, yes, she's Jewish. My son in New Haven, Daniel, his wife converted. She was not Jewish.
What is her name?
From, Anna.
Anna. Our last name?
Jeez. So Anna, no, Anna converted formally with the rabbi in Houston. In
mm-hmm.
fact, yeah, the whole thing with the mikveh is something I think that
yes.
my wife didn't do, but Anna
she
did, yeah. And they were married, you know, by a rabbi.
This was something that
in
she wanted, she was
oh,
ready
yeah,
to
well,
do,
yeah,
not
well,
because
of course,
her father-in-law
well,
said, her future father-in-law?
Encouraged. Something that she and my son, you know, they realize that, you know.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about what kinds of Jewish organizations you have been involved in, or you and Sigrid have been involved in.
A lot of this, by the way, I want to remind you, was in that CD.
Yes, right. I didn't see it.
For the years and so on, you know.
Yeah,
so
just generally, what has been your interest? What specific?
Well, it started early. In high school with the United Jewish Federation, then through college, and I was the chairman and all that stuff and so on. And then even in the med school. And then when I came back after I finished in the Air Force in Baltimore, then I got involved. Victor Cavalier was a very dear friend of mine, old friend. Brother Victor got me started in a bunch of things, the Jewish Community Relations Council, which was perhaps my all-time favorite when Lillian Friedberg was there. There's nobody like Lillian, and that was the most meaningful organization of any. Of any community organization, because Lillian was just an incredible person, and there's never been anybody like her, and no organization like her. And then the American Jewish Committee, and we even had an American Jewish Congress chapter for a while. And
are these things that you were interested in, Dr. Webber?
Oh yeah,
did
sure.
Did you do it because?
Oh, no, I was interested in it, nobody was making that. I didn't have any other reason.
Well, there's pressure sometimes.
And it wasn't easy to do either because I was, married and I was busy downtown and so on. No, I enjoyed them. And the ones I enjoyed the most were the ones that dealt with issues. That's why I say the JCRC. And then later on, Soviet Jewry, and then I was chairman of that. And I was on the Jewish Family and Children's Service board for a while, and then I became very active, and I was chairman for many years of the Pittsburgh Institute, and did a lot of work with them. And then I was active in the Hebrew Institute board for many years, and I enjoyed that, especially, you know, when Saul Abrams was there and active and so on.
How about the Arbiter Ring, which your parents were interested in?
Well, I never really got active so much in that. I guess, when my mother was active to the extent that time permitted her, because she worked with the Pioneer Women, and so on. And so I guess maybe, you know, Histadrut was a kind of Histadrut is male and women, men and women, but Pioneer Women and Amalia, those were women only. So.
Did your children participate in any of these kinds of organizations? Because sometimes kids whose parents are,
son David is very active, and I told you of these missions to Israel. I was on the ZOA board, and David is too. And in fact, David was just legal counsel on this, you know, this whole business. David served as legal counsel, and David is the one who really worked out the. We hope will be a permanent settlement, and now being submitted to a baked in.
I read about it.
Can you explain that to us?
That's a whole other. It's not that I not fit, but I mean, I don't want to because that's a whole.
Other children? Did they?
And Benjamin and Ingrid here in town are Ingrid and they're both have done things. The United Jewish Federation and the levels and so on. Ingrid, in fact, just was one of the committee people that put together a very nice function at the Pittsburgh Zoo about 4 or 6 weeks or so ago. And she may, if she can get off from the hospital, go to a weekend. They're having a thing in Cincinnati for young
So your activity.
And Benjamin does some of these things too. Danny, in his residency in neurosurgery in Houston and now, but he just doesn't, they go to the Jewish Center, a wonderful new Jewish Center in New Haven, they both go there and so on, but he doesn't really have time to be actively involved in the organizations, but they maintain the interest. And I share my publications from the various organizations then with them.
Good.
As I do, you know, I ship off packets of mail, or the kids now in Pittsburgh deliver personally to them. I say, you know, not everybody, twice a week. I cut out things, and I,
mm-hmm.
Well, it's
of
a
interest.
Good way to communicate, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, today there's a good column on Israel, and there's an editorial in the New York Times on the Swiss
right.
bank
yes.
thing. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, very good.
And so, you know,
I
have a secretary and, you know, Xeroxing and faxing and so on. So,
good.
And then we share all of these things. Mm-hmm. I get the magazines, you know, this one from American Jewish, this, and that one from ZOA, and another one from, you know, the Sigridim gets the National Council of Jewish Women, and, you know, the Pioneer Women, Ahmad, and so on. So, you know, I just share
have
them, and they all, you know, and they all have subscriptions to the Jewish Chronicle and all that stuff.
Do you think there are a lot of changes in the Jewish community over the years?
Well, sure, there have been changes. You know, kind of some of the things we've talked about. Pittsburgh, of course, is it may even be unique. It is certainly very atypical in terms of the Jewish community in Squirrel Hill, and as you know,
yes.
and you both of you probably know more about all this than I, but my wife recently bumped into a couple of different business type people that had told they came from, you know, New Jersey or there, so they, you know, they hear about this this community.
This community
there aren't many, you know, places. If you go
where they've
even in smaller cities, like, you know, New Haven is my second home, where, you know, they're dispersed, let alone places like Philadelphia and Detroit
yes.
and New York and Miami and Houston and Dallas and so on. You know, you don't find these kinds of enclaves anymore. I don't know that there's no other city in America, but offhand, I haven't heard of any place
no, right.
quite like
right.
Squirrel Hill. And so,
who would you attribute it to? I often wonder.
Well,
what
I think the geography, the proximity to Pitt and Carnegie Mellon for a lot of the faculty people, the nice homes in that area, the shopping district and so on, and then proximity to all the shuls
mm-hmm.
and so on. So even as people made money, they could buy homes,
right.
million-dollar homes. So they didn't have to schlep out to Fox Chapel or something. You know, obviously, many did. But I mean, they could start off in an apartment on the third floor somewhere
right.
in Bartlett Street, and you could wind up with a $1 million home if you wanted it on Beechwood Boulevard or Bennington, right? So in other words, you could do all these things, and then proximity to the cultural centers in Oakland and the downtown area. So you throw all of that together and the sports places, etc. So you had it all here available, and that's why I think so many people.
But
have
you
come.
Can say something similar about East End, where there was a tremendous Jewish
that's
population
right. what happened
and
there.
B'nai Israel.
Yeah, that's true.
And shopping and all the things
it's,
you
it's,
mentioned,
it's essentially
and it's
gone.
Dissolved.
All gone. The Jewish
so you wonder what
no,
made
you're quite
it
right.
Say.
I don't know. Well, maybe. Part of the answer may be there wasn't a big enough Jewish community to straddle both areas, a big enough Jewish population. The other thing is, while it is close to all of these things, on the one hand, like with housing and so on, there's some beautiful houses, but there aren't that many. Another thing is, too, it's a greater proximity to non-Jewish communities, especially, I think, the black community in Homewood Preston, and then coming in from Lawrenceville and so on. Whereas Squirrel Hill, you know, you got parks on some boundaries, and then you got
right.
Oakland with the cultural center on the other, and so on. So, you know, and then you move on in toward Frick Park, and you travel that stretch down Forbes Avenue.
Mm, yes.
So you almost have like a self-imposed non-walled ghetto.
a very interesting situation.
Yeah,
somebody should study it sometime.
Yeah, well, it is. I guess then the whole thing, of course, with the Orthodox community and the business of, you know, being able to walk here and walk there and so on, and
but
having those
Orthodox
boundaries.
But the Orthodox lived in East End,
and too.
Walked
yeah,
to the synagogue.
Sure.
I can't remember the rabbi's name who had a born for years and years and years.
Yes, for many, many years, yeah.
And here was this historical place, B'nai
Yisrael. No, you're right.
It's
well, what
odd.
Happened to...
It's odd.
To, yeah, they had everything out there.
Uh-huh. While we're speaking of your Jewish causes, have you experienced much anti-Semitism, especially in your professional life?
Well, it's always there. Anybody that says otherwise is a fool. It's always there in one form or another. Have I experienced it? Sure, from the time that I was a little kid, all through school with, you know, remarks here and fights there and so on. And whether, you know, it's school or professions or anywhere. Well, what can you say about it? I mean, you know, it's all, you know, you deal with it. It can't be too open and virulent because it wouldn't be tolerated and it would be embarrassing even to other non-Jews who might not necessarily love Jews, but who feel that it is simply unacceptable social behavior. So these people can only go so far, right?
Yes.
The ones who are anti-Semites. My father used to talk about winter anti-Semites and summer anti-Semites. they were, you know, open and so on, others he was covered up with clothing.
Coat and snow.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, what, you can just sit and talk for, but the answer, you know, I mean, have I experienced anything of a intensive, protracted nature or so? You know, no, you know, or has it...